How's it going, all? My name's Chris. I run a window cleaning business, and we've decided to start a podcast and wax lyrical about all things self-employed and business stuff. So obviously, the old expression, where there's muck, there's brass. In other words, where there is a problem, there is a solution. If you can market that solution and make money on the back of it, then you have the potential to run your own business. So with me, it's my good friend and colleague, Phil Rogan. How's it going, Phil?
Yeah, not too bad, Chris. Things going all right.
And just basically want to sort of have a bit of a chat, a bit about our journey. Obviously, this being the first sort of podcast, we're just trying to build a bit of an intro. Just let me know your, you know, let everybody on the podcast know, obviously, where you got started, you know, from being that employee to starting a business and your journey, if you like.
Yeah, so how far do we go back? It's kind of like, you know, it's...
Well, Phil was born in Liverpool.
We won't go that far back, but, you know, we'll go back to when I was a car salesman, really, a few years back before starting. So my history before I came into the window cleaning industry was I was a car salesman for like Savannah Clark and Vauxhall on the forecourt, addressing kind of people coming on in the sales and marketing background. Yeah. So, you know, it was only so long that I could kind of deal with being told what to do. In the best way possible.
We've all been, you know, there.
So
we have all been there.
It's shortly after, you know, I got kind of buying cars at auction and tidying them up, marking them, reselling them. But the thing is with the car industry, really, it's kind of, you've got to constantly have stock, and you've got to constantly rely on the vehicles being sold to generate the revenue, and that doesn't last very long when you have a bad run. So for me, I needed to find something passive. A passive income stream. So during my journey to where I have been today, I've been to best way of getting passive income streams, whether it be pay weekly carpets or and then eventually into window cleaning, which I'm here today. And it's, you know, quick one on that is, like, you know, we're growing really well, you know, we're doing well. And
because I mean, you've got, like, you know it's not like this is, people say, oh, window cleaning, you can't make that much money doing it. And I must admit, I was a bit staggered by it when I very first started as well. But I mean, you've got like 5 vans and just a unit. Just put a bit more meat on the bones. And how do you go from being that one man band to having 5 vans, series of employees, an office, back office, and stuff like that, and a unit? You know, that I think a lot of times people sort of just assume that most people that start businesses, they're just going to start. They're going to start up, they've got a wedge of cash behind them, a wheelbarrow, they're just going to tip that wheelbarrow out and just go, right, I'm going to throw money at a problem and grow a business. Yeah, it does happen, but most people that start businesses actually don't start that way. They start with very little, I find. Yeah. The more, I always, when I was growing up, and I don't know about you, it was always my experience that people seem to think that people that start businesses were like, oh, these mystical, you know, masters of the dark arts.
Yeah.
That ultimately had a pot of money and they took a chance and they threw money at that business and went, you know what, that's a business, happy days. And it's not like that. And the number of people that we know personally, you know, that have started, that have had nothing, I think that's an important message, I think, we can share with people. Because ultimately, you know, again, growing up, for me, I don't know about you, because obviously, it's, you know, for those, you know, not aware, he's actually from Liverpool.
Yeah.
What gave him away?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. You wouldn't have guessed.
But no, joking aside though, we're both from the northwest of England. We're both from, you know, working class backgrounds. You know, we live in areas where perhaps it's, you know, aspiration is the back of everyone's mind. They're just trying to get to Friday, a lot of people, aren't they? You know?
Well, yeah, and, you know, where I can reflect on that is my mindset from the get-go really has been, you know, I've never been one that goes out and blows £6,000 up the wall on the weekends. You know, people might look at that and go, well, that's your loss, mate, you haven't enjoyed it. But at the end of the day, I've got the money to that I've kept there and reinvested into myself, 100%. Reinvested into the business. Obviously, when I was in the motor trade, I sold a lot of the end, when I closed that down, I shut that down, sold all my cars off, and then we went on a sales and marketing page for other window cleaners. We got the revenue from the canvassing mainly. And then we said, right, okay, we're going to put the canvassing marketing with the service together to then go, well, yeah, now we're going to start building our own round. But we've cash flowed from marketing for other window cleaners and obviously taking the cash that we've been generating through ourselves to get to where we are today. But, you know, if anyone thinks I'm a window cleaner, I'm far from it. If you expect to see me on the pole...
You're a business owner that happens to specialise in window cleaning.
Window cleaning, yeah. And, you know, we just keep putting the money back in, reinvesting. I'm still sitting here today with nothing. Still sitting in a mid-demographic sort of property, you know, where everyone is looking to Friday. We still run and pay ourselves on sort of same sort of things because we're reinvesting. And, but yeah, it is a challenging thing. And, you know, it's all about your mindset, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, you just, honest to God, you just hit the nail on the head there. It's almost like you're saying is that, there's this misconception that just because you run a business and you've got people that work for you, that you're some sort of, you know, drug baron Pablo Escobar type character that's got money to burn and, you know, 5 or 6 holidays a year and all this sort of stuff. And as I've got to know you over the last year or so properly, it's apparent that, you know, you rent your own home. I rent my own home. We're nothing special. No. And I think that I don't know about you, but I always used to grow up thinking people that run businesses are one of two things. They're either crooks or they're very special, very intelligent people that ultimately have found a way to game the system.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've met friends of mine, you know, one particular, Danny, who runs a plumbing and heating firm locally to us. It became apparent to me that, you know, he's just an ordinary guy who can fix a series of problems that not a lot of people can. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can gear your mindset towards that, you're going to win. And I've seen where you mentioned before where it was like you obviously bet the cars and it's very hit and miss, and it's like you have a good month and you have an absolute shocking month.
Yeah, definitely.
And it kind of one balances out the other. And it's interesting because Danny, who's a friend of mine, again, gave me advice when I started my business. He was sort of talking along the lines of you want to put yourself in the position of being a farmer rather than a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than going out and hunting for a deal, you know, there's a car, I'm going to sell it. Once I sell it, I'll reap the benefit of it. And then I've got to go find another car. I've got to go find another thing to sell.
Yeah.
And you're always chasing your tail. Whereas on the window cleaning side of life, it's like, right, well, I'll clean your windows every 4 weeks, for argument's sake, on that day, see you in 4 weeks. And that one person is paying you every 4 weeks. And you're cultivating a relationship. You are the farmer. You go from being a hunter where you're like sort of scrambling around trying to find the next deal, trying to find the next sale,
mm-hmm.
to sort of actually, once you've sold the customer on the service you offer and it's a recurring service, all of a sudden, actually, the money, as long as you do a good job, you're reliable, turn up and don't break anything, really, you've just got to keep the customer sweet and be reliable. That's really, and deliver on your promises. That's all you've got to do. And really, once you've systemized it, the world's your oyster, isn't it?
Definitely. And, you know, it comes back to that passive income stream. I know window cleaning went from the outwork and things when you say it's passive income stream.
When you're a one-man band, it ain't passive,
let me
tell you that.
It's not passive, no. Eventually, you know, in time, things may become passive, but my intention of coming into the window cleaning industry a little over a year ago, back in November, when I kind of really went at it properly, that we went, okay, you know, we're going to reinvest and eventually it becomes passive. But even with passive becomes problems because you have employees, you got vans, you got systems breaking down. So,
boys and girls, me and Phil, we've had many a conversation about the day-to-day running of our business. And it's funny because when you run a business, it's not a snob thing, but when you run a business, you do associate more with other business owners.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that you do that is because only a business owner is going to know...
Feel your pain.
It's going to understand where you're coming from, understand the absolute graft and the absolute... You know, sometimes it's not about graft, it's about being emotionally drained.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, once you think you've solved one problem, another one will pop up. And there's my brother joking, he said, well, actually, you could also put... part-time firefighter on your resume if you needed to, because you're constantly going around putting fires out, solving problems, and
that's it.
You know, you're taking all these things onto yourself so that ultimately, you know, the business runs as smooth as possible. And I mean, you've had some absolute mares recently, haven't you? I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, definitely. I think if we look back at the past kind of 8 weeks, you know, we talk about, you know, all our vans are tracked. So when we got one guy, you know, rushing through work and disappearing to Ipswich, you know, without telling us.
I mean, you've got to be. I'm not necessarily having a dig at you, but you've got to be some kind, special kind of stupid.
Yeah, to do that.
To do that and definitely think you're going to get away with it.
Yeah.
But people do it. But people still think, oh, there's a chance he won't find out. You know, yeah. Put some more meat on the bones of that. What happened there?
So basically, yeah, we, this one day, you know, this one guy, he goes out with the intention of doing 20 window cleans, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, the guy normally, we normally run our shift from 7 in the morning, half 7 thereabouts, till 3, you know, with the winter timetable all the way year round. So, this one day he's really fast between his jobs, so I'm like, 12 o'clock he's finished, okay,
it's like, I know it's Friday and that, but
yeah, you know. And then I'm thinking, oh, that's really fast for him, so things not of it, off he goes home. And next morning I just periodically just checks my tracker system like I do, notice there's red dots all the way down to Ipswich, turns around and comes all the way back, and I'm like, okay, been to Ipswich, company vehicle.
Was that? Did you not think at one point that was an error?
Yeah,
sure. Because obviously it's not. I mean, Liverpool is here, and Ipswich is right the way down here, and it's like, well, how have you?
So we called up our tracking supplier, and they turned around and said, no, nothing to do with us. It's live, and obviously, guy came in, tried to put a defence mechanism up for it that he'd been to on a hospital run, and it was a really urgent thing, but still had time to go to McDonald's, get fuel, get a Costa, and kind of
pull the other one, mate, it's got bells on.
That's the one. So clearly he's been at it, you know what I mean, or doing up to no good or whatever. But anyway, that's that. And he came in and we had to get rid of him.
Yeah, understandable.
You know, it's made a decision, but for us as a business, we've had to restructure. We've now over recruited for times like today, for example. Like, you know, we text all our customers the night before, as you do yourself, Chris.
Yeah, 100%.
And you know, we've got to be reliable, we've got to be there on time, we work in all weathers. And you know, the guy was off sick on Wednesday and Thursday this week and said he'd be in today, and texted 6:15 this morning saying, I'm still not well, can't come in. And now one of the other guys is having to pick her up on a Saturday. So
yeah,
it's the way it goes, isn't it, Chris? You know yourself.
The thing is, you know, I people always say, that, again, on previous YouTube channels and other social media and interactions I've had with other people that have started businesses or are thinking about getting into starting a window cleaning business, some of them, there's a common theme where they always think that, oh, well, you know, what if there's a problem? What if there's this? What if there's that? And my stock answer to them is, there is always going to be a problem. And if it's not this one problem, it'll be something else. You know, if it's not a problem with employees, your vehicle will break down. If your vehicle doesn't break down, your kit will break down. If what's name, you text your customer the night before, then you'll inevitably be let down by a customer. At some point, something will go wrong. And I don't think it's necessarily about trying to put things right before they go wrong. You can mitigate against it, but you can never completely rule it out. And I think if you can get your head around the idea that at some point things will fuck up,
yeah,
at some point it will blow up in your face, at some point you will sort of you know, I jokingly have said to people in the past, does anyone want to buy a window cleaning business for a quid? When I've had a really bad day, it's like, for God's sake, man, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I just want a normal day, you know. And it does happen. And those that think it's all plain sailing, I've no idea what goes into it. But again, I just think, you know, you're going to encounter problems. And I think it's how you react to the problem is more important than the actual problem itself, I think, a lot of the time.
Well, yeah, as we've talked before briefly, you know, we've talked about systems and processes and what systems we can put in place to obviously mitigate those problems happening in the future. You know, if we can put structured systems in place to mitigate them, then the... you've already got a solution potentially in 100%. Place, because, you know, as you know more on that than I will. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, we've spoke a bit about like the sort of the systems that we have in place. For example, you know, guys signing up customers, guys giving quotes, because my guys right now, the you know, they'll go out and do a job, and let's say for argument's sake, what used to happen was, you know, for example, someone would go up to Adam, let's say, who's one of my guys, and say, you know, oh, can you give us a quote for this? And what would happen is, traditionally, is that I would encourage Adam to get the customer to ring me. I would go through the rigmarole, given a quote. Yes, no, indifferent. They might sign up, they might not sign up. They might think about it and all this sort of stuff. And then the whole process was a bit sort of disjointed and a bit sort of slow. And as I've said a good long while you know, since, is that if you delegate things out to people,
yeah,
give them the trust, let them handle things a bit more, give them a little bit of autonomy, then things will work, and things will work a little bit more smoother, and working smoother is more working efficiently. And so, as I've said to you in the past, now if it, like Adam goes out for argument, or any of my guys go out now and clean windows for the day, what will happen is that a customer will, you know, someone might reach out to him and say, actually, mate, how much for mine?
Yeah.
Adam will get through the job at hand and say, if you give me 5 minutes, let me finish this job, I'll come round and give you a quote right now, okay? Yeah. And he will quote them. Now, yes, I hear people's alarm bells ringing. They'll say, oh my God, you're trusting your employees to do that. What if he cocks it up? Yeah, you know what? He could cock it up. But the thing is, you know, you've got to allow a bit of flexibility. You can't just say, no, this is the system and we will... You can't necessarily regiment for everything. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is, let's say for argument's sake, if he does underprice the job, you've still got the additional value of that job in the short term. And you can negotiate with the customer,
yeah,
a price change later on. Mm-hmm. So Adam will put a price on for it. He will add them to our database, our system.
Yeah.
And then from there, they are messaged the night before. They fall into our way of doing things. They're made aware of our T's and C's up front via text message in writing and also verbally. So there's, at no point can they say, you know, no matter what happens, at no point can they say they weren't told, they weren't made aware.
Yeah.
You know, then ultimately the system, it becomes part of the routine of doing things, and it just falls in with it. And it frees me up to do other things that, for example, my employees either can't or won't do. So things like administration, things like fixing the tools, things like, you know, going out and giving quotes for bigger jobs.
Yeah.
So while my guys, window cleaners, can quote a small window cleaning job, if it's a big job, I might, you know, warrant a bit more of my own attention. I'll go out and do it myself. But yeah, again, that's a system. You know, when things are paid for, you know, we have a bookkeeping system, a back office, which is run by my mum.
Yeah.
Hi, mum. You know, and obviously that keeps her busy a lot of the time, but it also frees me up. So insofar as the admin, I hand the receipts over. I go through the payments maybe once or twice a week.
Yeah.
With her. You know, any debts are chased up. Any small short-term debts are chased up by the guys. They have access to the handset, etc., and they're responsible for chasing up short-term debts. Long-term debts, I become involved if I have to. Yeah. The rest of the time, I'm looking at growth. So while they're doing the day-to-day on the tools, they're looking inwards at the task. I'm looking outwards to what comes next.
Definitely.
I think it staggered me as well. Just what got me the most as well when we were having conversations was just how much current business owners, even guys that have been in the game a lot longer than us, refuse to let go. They refuse to sort of delegate stuff out. They worry about, oh, well, what happens if the employee cocks something up and stuff? And it's like, well, he will. You've just got to learn to manage it.
It's like getting off that roundabout, Chris, you know, which, you know yourself, once you've got around and you're constantly servicing that on a 4-weekly rota, and you've got nobody to get in that driving seat and go and take that work and wait off you to allow you to do it. We speak to many people and
100%. I mean, you could work yourself into the ground, and some people see that, wear that as a badge of honor. They think, oh right, well, I work, you know, 90 plus hours a week, and I just, you know, most people will go, well, you know, good on you and well done, and I just go, I just think it's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you're working 90 hours a week, it's fair to say you can employ someone to take the pressure off you.
Definitely.
And people refuse to sort of delegate, let go and sort of say, and I know what they say. They say, well, I've had employees in the past and it didn't work out. And
I can feel the pain, definitely.
Oh, you know, especially with, like,
you know, it's live today. We've got one guy called in sick, you know, with the promise that he's coming in today. So, you know, we've now got our window cleaners on 3 days a week, which some people may think is intriguing.
3 days a week. And it's like, imagine, like, most businesses, it's a case of you've got your guys, 40 hour contract, let's say.
Yeah.
Let's smash as much work, let's pile as much work onto them as possible.
Yeah.
And we make money on the back of it.
Yeah.
that's how most business owners think.
Mm-hmm.
But you seem to have come at it from a different angle. Talk a bit more about that 3 days a week. So, and why have you done that? Why and how is it? How does that work from a cash flow and profit perspective?
Well, we're doing 3 days a week because having 5 days a week with two guys or two guys in one van.
Yeah.
One van goes down or one guy goes down with a team of two, that really has a domino effect in servicing the work. And our promise is to service it reliable, regular, and all weather, all year round service. So the mentality of to overstaff, bring it back to 3 days a week,
was
to say, okay, purely from a logistics and a planning point of view, if one guy goes down and we've got the work covered in 3 days, then we've got the Thursday and the Friday to recover.
100%, yeah.
So
I like that.
If we've got 5 days having to work the work, and then one guy goes down on the Wednesday,
it involves a Saturday.
It involves a Saturday, Sunday.
I don't want to work a Sunday.
So there's an argument now between, are we under, are they working too little? We've got to find a balance, because now there's enough work, we're overpaying slightly in terms of what we're paying our staff, because we're only given 3 days a week. But there's enough there to justify 3 days a week. But if we go, I'm going a bit of a tangent here, but if we go back a bit, there's not enough work to 2 days a week is not enough, but 3 days is essentially three and a half days pay.
It's like,
on 3 days,
like Goldilocks zone.
So if we've got, they will always want a fourth day, but three is right in the middle. So we're not overworking them, we're not kind of putting too much pressure on them. 5 days a week window cleaning for some people is too much.
100%.
So 100%. Well, 3 days, they've still got the life, they've still got their own time, they've still got the work-life balance. They're not overworked, they're not underworked, and they're paid accordingly. And I think, you know, to put 20 hours a week in, so you get the best part of £350, not a bad week.
I wouldn't have said so. I mean, we've gone. It's interesting because, you know, we're talking about the same problem, but we're coming at it from two different ways. So the way we work it is our guys do a 6-hour working day.
Yeah.
5 days a week. We still service the customer every 4 weeks on the same day, text them the night before, working all weathers, same as yourself. But the way we've looked at it, I must admit, I went down the route of looking at what other business owners were doing and saying, they're like having guys working 8-hour days, piling the work in and saying, right, well, you've got to do £600 worth of work. You know, it's not practical. It might work in spits and spurts when you're covering holidays, sickness.
Yeah.
It might work in the short term, but in the long run, it just builds up resentment. And the lads just get, you know, thrashed to death, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So the thing is the way we've looked at it is to say, right, well, actually, we'll give them between, again, you know, a job varies, doesn't it? You know, a front of a house won't take you half as long as a full house to do, for argument's sake. But bracket, we tend to send them out to do between 22 and 28 jobs in a day of various sizes, right? So let's say, I mean, like, for example, like today, I know that one of my guys, he's going out and he's doing 19 jobs today. Three of those houses are next to each other and they're quite chunky sized. They're not like, you know, your standard sort of three bed semi. They are like pretty chunky houses, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those three houses each are probably about £40 each. But then on the flip side of that, the other houses kind of make up for it, you know, in terms of the jobs. But bottom line is, they work a 6-hour day. They get a life. So one of my guys, I asked him, said, well, you've got two choices. Do you want to work a full 8-hour day where we will stack work on you and do, you know, 30 to 35 jobs in a day, which is too much? Or would you much rather work to the current system, you know, that I've just discussed, in working 6 hours? I will give them 6 hours worth of work. They will achieve that. And once they get done, they can go home early. But I don't penalise them. I pay them a daily rate. I pay them a salary. So that if, let's say, for argument's sake, they're really efficient and they cut through the work in, you know, let's say I give them 6 hours worth of work, but they cut through it in 4.5 hours, and they decide, actually, you know what, I'm going to go home, spend time with the kids. Why should I penalise them for being efficient and achieving a result? So they still get their full day's pay. They still get their salary, but they get the benefit of actually spending time with the kids. You know, you would not believe the amount of people I speak to, working people, actually say, I would much rather work a shorter day and pick my kids up from school.
Oh yeah, my
that for me, yeah. For working men, it's a very strange thing. You know, talking about a guy that grew up in Bolton, you know, the working man club mentality, where it was like, working men, we don't deal with the kids. But like now, it's like, it's the goal. If you can, it's a flex for a lot of people to sort of turn around and say, well, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, thrash myself to death at work, and I'd much rather work a shorter day and pick my kids up from school.
Definitely, and I think winter clearing can kind of, when you reflect on winter clearing, if you work a winter timetable, which is a 6-hour day,
it's light, isn't it?
8 o'clock till 3, you know, you can't clean windows at 6-7 o'clock in the mid-December, Chris. It's, unless you've got head torches or something. Here we go.
Minus lamp, head torch, yeah.
You know, it can't be done. So, you know, we work a winter timetable, we finish by 3 o'clock, and there is time to get the kids. You know, I've always said to my missus, you know, I want to be there for the kids growing up, and unfortunately, it's being difficult. I don't know what you reflect on yourself, but it is difficult, isn't it? You know,
worry for a short time, you know, so you might as well make the most of it. You know what I mean? And I actually had a conversation with Sam, the camera's behind the camera today.
Yeah.
You're never going to go to your grave wishing you'd taken one more photograph. No. You're never going to go to your grave wishing you clean one more window. But by God, there is every chance that you're going to wake up one morning, realize that your kids have left home, and you were at work. It's gone. Yeah. Because it is the thing that people, we're probably going a bit off topic here, but I don't care really. It's one of those. It's like, it's not really off. See, it's not really off topic at all, is it? Because I mean, the thing is, why did you start your business? You started your business for time, flexibility. You know, your standard of life is better than being self-employed. There's no question about it. Now the risks are higher, sure, right? But you're going to look back on your life one day, and you want to. I don't know about you. I don't want to go to my deathbed with any regrets. I want to go completely spent.
Yeah.
I want to go, you know, and ultimately look back and think, yeah, fucking happy with that. But you're not going to do that while you're thrashing yourself to death for someone else.
100%. And you know, there's a lot of people out there who we can within a couple of miles of here, hundreds, thousands everywhere, who are working to pay the rent, pay the car, pay their HP, pay all the bills to be left with 20 quid at the end of the week.
It's like, I'm going to pay money to drive a car I can't afford to impress people that don't even like me.
Yeah.
You know, just to because they think that's a flex.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, I'd much rather live within my means, rent my own home, have a standard of living where I can look back and spend as much time with my kids as I deem, you know, that I need to, that I want to. You know, give a standard of living to my wife and my children that I never had as a kid. And again, I mean, I don't know what your upbringing was like. Mine was like, I wouldn't say, look, I was never hard off. We weren't rich, but we weren't rolling in it.
Yeah.
And I remember blankets and candles, and I remember my mum feeding me and my brother. And strangely enough, we used to eat dinner at the table together.
Yeah.
And a handful of times, after a while, what used to happen was me and my brother would sit at the table and we would eat. And my mum and dad wouldn't.
Yeah.
And initially I thought, oh, then maybe they'll eat later on. I didn't actually realise when I turned 16, 17, it was because there was nothing in the cupboard, and whatever was in the cupboard came to us.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? I look back and obviously the sacrifice that my mum in particular made, because she had to go back when she was working. And see, now the thing is, my wife, she does work, but she works out of choice. She works because she wants. She's a teaching assistant in a local school, but she works because she wants to.
Yeah.
And she would do that job for free. She actually did at one point. She was working at the same school that our kids went to. She was a voluntary teaching assistant. She would do that job for free. But, you know, she now, obviously, she works a full-time paid position, six hours a day.
Yeah.
Gets to pick her kids up from school. You know, this is the point, isn't it? People are not looking for masses of money, I don't think, anymore. They're looking for flexibility. Flexibility is more important than money.
Yeah, because you can't, at the end of the day, as you said, reflecting on before, Chris, you know, when you get to, when your kids are growing up and flew the nest as such, you might have $250,000 or £1 million in the bank. I don't know how things pan out in the future, but what good's that if you can't enjoy your time?
100%.
It's no point. 100%. If you haven't enjoyed the time with your kids, then you can't take it with you. It's just back to you and your missus, kids, grandkids, and there's no point making it in 20 years' time when you can't enjoy the time now. So it's that fine balance, getting to where, you know, like something, you know, me lad suffered over the past few years with me and the efforts I've put in, and hence why I've tried to cut my hours back to like 2 o'clock finishes, 3 o'clock finishes.
I was going to say, I'm quite impressed with you, to be fair, mate, because, like I say, you know, without trying to butter you up or anything, but when I first met you, talking about 18 months ago, I shit you not, boys and girls, you know, if there was a 25th hour on the clock, Phil would find it. You know, you used to work like an absolute bastard. You used to just knock out hours and put in so much time. And it's noticeable seeing you now how much more zen, how much more chill you are, how much more, yeah, you know what, more focused. And it's sometimes less is way more. I think, you know, you can, the only person that wins when you thrash yourself to death is The Undertaker. That's it, you know. And
yeah.
And I plan on making that guy work for his living, quite frankly. I plan on making him wait as long as possible before I give that guy a single solitary bean of what I've earned. So, you know. But yeah, no, I mean, the whole, it's interesting, going slightly back a little bit, I mean, backtrack a little bit. When you started your business, we kind of realised this, didn't we, that we've come at it from two separate angles, haven't we? Because obviously I started effectively a business from a bucket upwards because, again, I had nothing to start with, and I started with what I had, and all this sort of stuff. You've kind of gone in from, rather than going to the window cleaning side of it straight away, you were more of a marketing guy. You were more of the, you were gift of the gab. And that, you think that came from obviously selling the cars and stuff?
Yeah, so it was about, you know, building a marketing team to go out into areas, deploy into residential areas across Liverpool. Obviously, I couldn't cash flow for them straight away. Mm. So we had to get cash flow for that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I sold my previous car business, which gave me a few £1,000, but it still wasn't enough to pay canvassers a permanent wage. So we went and marketed for another guy in the northwest of England.
Mm.
We built him a roundup in a area of Liverpool that was completely segmented away from where we were even going to touch.
I like that. You don't shit where you eat, do you?
Yeah, exactly. So we then got a cash injection from that.
Mm.
We then used that money to start linking up the service to the product, marketing and putting them together. We got a window van, basic systems, DIY builds, no kind of heavy investments into third parties or other suppliers out there to put the kit in.
I like that.
It was basics. We went out, we knocked the doors, we put the customers on a direct debit platform, and then we started charging them accordingly. But that cash flow that started coming in from them kind of went back into the pot to then keep paying canvassers, so we could get one canvasser, two canvasser, three canvasser,
and just go out there and just keep
that growth line, just keep going up and up and up. Obviously, you know, when we're plowing that many customers on, you know, it did get difficult because we got wages of insurance, staff, canvassers,
and you still got the added problem of that every other business owner has, which is getting money out of people that are not necessarily ready to pay up. So you know, it's like, you know, when you might, even if the customer comes out to you and says, oh, actually, can you clean my windows and blah, blah, and you're like, yeah, no dramas, that sort of thing, set them up and all that jazz, and payment is, shall we say, less than forthcoming, you're almost like, you've still got to meet your cash flow.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, and this is why we're going back to the same before, the level of stress that you must have been under, thrashing yourself to bits. I'm like, I mean, fair play to you, mate, but it's like it's not my bag. I wouldn't wear that, no chance.
Yeah, well, we were in full on growth mode. It was literally, we were come Friday, it was like we got £250. You know, we were having to say, listen, we can't go out for the weekend because the money's staying in the pot. We need to pay the wages, and it did get to a point with us, as you well know, Chris. You know, back in November last year, we hit a point of like, look, we've just got no money, it's just all going back in the business. I decided to say, look, we're going to sell what we got. We sold it. We had a large £50,000 cash injection into the business. Mm. And then we went twice the size on marketing. So we got the 50K. We then got that. We doubled the canvassing team. But then we also doubled the growth. And in the first 3-4 months, we were back to the same level as what we sold at.
Yeah. So and you kind of just sort of coasted through it a little bit.
So we took a drop for the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
We got more canvassers. We doubled the canvassing team. And then we just massively doubled the growth for that 3 months.
That's incredible.
Got to January, February. And then we were at the same customer number that we were at when we sold up in the November. But obviously in doing that, we kind of...
So really, you've gone from like zero customers to how many in what kind of time period? But kind of put that in perspective.
Yeah, so when we go back to May last year, when we decided, once we'd done the canvas and bill for one guy and we had that obviously cash injection, we went in May last year, we said, okay, we're going to do the service ourselves and we're going to put it to the product. We put that together, we put on 750 customers thereabouts until November 23. Right. We are in 24 now. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, November 23.
See, you better keep up.
November 23, we sold up and... obviously got that 50 grand cash injection. Yeah. We doubled the marketing team. We put the 50 grand straight back in. We then took that back up to 750 customers by January, February. Yeah. Obviously, we've got a lot of new queens on going. We've got more vans. We actually put ourselves in a position where we bought the vans using that 50K as well. So we had all the tools, the vans and everything in place waiting for the work instead of having the work waiting for the vans. So we put ourselves ahead there with that. So we said, when we get there, we've got the vans, we've got the equipment, we've got the systems in place to deal with the work.
Your background as well, from being from the motor trade, sourcing the vehicles is a big thing. And it's a lot of people think when you've got like three or four vans, and I must admit, I fell into this category even as recently as when we first met about 18 months ago. I was forever thinking, well, if you need another vehicle, then you just go and get one on finance, get another kit on finance, rah, rah, pay your dues, pay it down over sort of 5 years, and then you cash flow again and go again. And, so you've managed to use your knowledge in the motor trade to sort of circumvent that with S-category vehicles and stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, so, I know some people might shy on the fact that it's a Category N or a Category S, and put it right.
So just put some bones on that. What is a Category S and a Category? Obviously, you can wax lyrical to me all day about it. What people that are sort of not necessarily au fait with it, what is an S-cat vehicle? What is an N-cat vehicle?
Well, a categorised vehicle in a Category N basically means non-structural damage, and that can be down to a simple scrape along a wing or a simple tap in the bumper or a misconfigured alloy wheel as such or a bent track rod end. So it's a non-structurally, that doesn't affect the chassis of the vehicle, basically.
Right.
So that's a Category N. So if, for example, a vehicle's in a 10-mile-an-hour tap and it cracks the back bumper, the vehicle will write that vehicle off and pay out full value of the vehicle instead of putting it through repair.
Right.
So they will categorise that as a non-structurally damaged vehicle.
So the thing is then, is obviously, most people, obviously, when they're getting a HP van, will probably pay out full value of the, let's say, a second-hand van, full value of that second-hand van. Myself, I paid £36,000 for a 67 Reg Vivaro, and then I put kit in the back of it. I financed the whole lot, and so basically the van was costing me 290 quid a month, and the kit was costing me £185 a month, right? So for that price, so put that up against now, what can you expect to source an S-category vehicle for?
Well, there's a lot of variables that go into it. Obviously, mileage, age of the vehicle. But if we use one vehicle that I'm using now as a typical example, right? So our vehicle's a 64-plate Vauxhall Vivaros. My purchase price was around the £2,000 mark.
£2,000
for a 64-plate Vauxhall Vivaro.
So you've gone 36K. I'm here and you're like there in terms of cost. So how much profit are you making on that? That's, you know what I mean? That's...
So yeah, so once we've obviously sourced out a kind of £2,000, might take £500, £1,000 to repair it.
It won't be perfect.
Obviously the Category N is obviously devalued it from its original market value anyway. Mm. But if you go and walk and say, that's going to cost you £9,000-£10,000 plus, and you get that on finance or whatever it might be, you've still got £7,000-£8,000 saving. So that saving that we were able to apply on the purchase of the vehicles, we were able to use that same money to multiply the vehicles by three. So we were able to buy three vehicles for the price of one at that ratio.
I've been missing out on this whole time. And when you told me about that the first time, I was kicking myself. I was like, why am I financing my vans and my kit when I could achieve the exact same thing for literally 10% of the value? I was like...
We go and obviously get that, we'd put that, fix it, put a system in it, and we were able, 50K, we were able to get three vehicles for around about £10,000 kitted out.
That's incredible.
Instead of...
Yeah, well...
So we use the money the best we can, really.
Yeah, instead of like 90-odd, you spend 90-odd to £1,000, £100,000 to get three vehicles with three kits on the road.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And the thing is, like you say, so you've fallen back on your marketing background to get the work in. then you've effectively sourced the vehicles at stupidly low cost. Obviously, you've got the repair to consider and stuff like that, and that's not free. And it's a lot, in some respects, you're taking on a bit more sweat equity. You've got to put work in.
Yeah.
But you're saving money, so much money.
Yeah.
You know, it just goes to show. I mean, like, say, learning lessons left, right, and Chelsea. I mean, I've been cleaning windows, or I've had my window cleaning business now approaching 10 years now, and even now I'm still learning lessons from people like yourself and others. You know, there's no magic ticket, one size fits all formula. But if you can cherry pick ideas from different people, you can reap the benefit of other people's experience. You'll learn from other people's mistakes is a lot cheaper than learning from your own.
Oh yeah, because you know, if there's a guide on running a business and running it right and it never going wrong, then that guy's a multi-millionaire. You know,
it's, but there's never take my money.
Yeah, there's never anything out there is the Chris to say this is how it's done, and you stick to this plan. And there's always variables and everything that goes into it. There's always a downside to everything. You know, category M vehicle, your resale value is not great.
No.
But if you're going to use it and use it as a workhorse for many years to come, it
doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
You can sell it for scrap and still make money on the back of it. That's so it. 100%. But yeah, no, I just thought, what's the name? We, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, this whole muck and brass sort of podcast, looking to sort of try and, you know, get people, you know, raise awareness for those wanting to start businesses, be a resource, and if, you know, need be, like, you know, share some of our ups and downs of running the business, and ultimately, you know, provide value where we can, basically. But I'm a massive fan of, like, sort of interacting and learning from other people. I mean, we're very fortunate. We're part of a group that of other business owners that we can learn from. And they can learn from our experience as well. It's not just about taking it. It's obviously about interaction and give and take and offering value and stuff like that. And I think the more people you can engage with, the more people you can talk to, the better you're going to be. And especially, it is, without sounding contrived, it's a very unique kind of club. And it doesn't matter whether you started a business yesterday or whether you are 20 years into the game, you know, you separate yourself from everybody else out there that's prepared to just sort of take a wage, get to Friday. You know, I have the utmost respect for anyone starting a business, because ultimately they've had the stones to say, you know what, there is a better way. I'm going to try it. And if I fuck it up, I can always go back to punching a clock.
Yeah.
I can always go back to doing whatever it was I was doing before, knowing full well that at least I gave it a go. And I think this is the biggest thing, I think, for me, is you've got to look at what's available to you, work with what you have for as long as you have, until it either works or you know for a fact it doesn't, and then you have choices.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've said to you many a time, and other people, that I'm not going to go to my grave with any regrets whatsoever.
No.
None whatsoever. I will go completely spent and just go, well, at least I gave it a go. You know,
that's it.
And there's things as well, is we spoke about it as well, where I've spent money. At one point, I was going to franchise my business. I made it quite public that I was going to franchise my business. It's kind of on the back burner for now. I've spent £7,000 learning the process, getting the documents together, and working out how the licenses work and all this sort of jazz, the insurances, everything that I need to do, and then ultimately parked it.
Yeah.
Now, some people might go, £7,000. Oh my God, I spent £7,000. And obviously, you know, you spend £7,000 to ultimately realise, actually, not just yet.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, in the future, depending on how things turn out, you know, it might still be something that's on the cards. But for now, I'm going to park it. But I'm not going to regret having spent that £7,000.
No.
Because I've learned lessons.
That's it. It's developed you as a person and your knowledge within. 100%. So it's the whole cycle of running a business is we're never above anyone else. We're always constantly learning.
You're either winning or you're learning.
You're winning or you're learning. 100%. You know, and it's so, and you've always got to take that step off the cliff to take that gamble. And for anyone who is looking, going, oh, it might work, well, you're never going to know until you step off that cliff, are you, Chris?
No.
And you know, you're never going to have that roundabout or that, you know, that 9 to 5.
Just make sure you build your parachute before you jump off.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's the way it always goes. But I've always worked for myself back. I'm getting on now, 34, should I say. I'm a pup, but I feel it because it's been a graft, should I say. I've always worked for myself now from when I was 21 years of age. So I've been self-employed / business.
That's incredible.
For 13 years.
When I started, I was 34.
Yeah.
So I was like 34 years old when I very first, and that was 34 with a bucket, learning how to, obviously doing the trade, doing it with a bucket and building it up slowly over time. My financial education was shocking. I mean, when I paid for my first van, God's honest truth this, when I paid for my first van, I genuinely didn't know anything about finance. I didn't know you could go to a bank and borrow money against certain things. And my financial education, I was financially illiterate.
Yeah.
And I turned up to buy my van at Poulton Vans with a cash bag, a carrier bag full of cash.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's the van I want. That's 8,665 quid in change. And I turned up with 8,700 in a carrier bag. And the guy looked at me like I had a frog on my head and was like, whoa, calm down, Spartacus. What are you doing? And I was a bit like, well, just won't compare for the van. And he goes, right, first thing you need to do, mate, is go back to the bank and put that in. Do not. It's like you're walking around the streets of Blackpool with just shy of $9,000 in a carrier bag. What are you doing? You're either going to get arrested or robbed. Genuinely, I put myself in a taxi, went back to the bank, and then sort of went through the whole process, bought the bank transfer, deposits, all this sort of stuff. And over time, I've had to build up that financial education.
Yeah.
I genuinely didn't realise that there were other options. I thought it was a case of taking things at face value. That thing costs $8,000. Right, well, I need $8,000 for it.
Yeah.
I need a vehicle on the road. That's going to cost me $60,000. So I always thought, well, if you want to put a vehicle on the road, you need $60,000's worth of money.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think that's why me and people like me used to put business owners on a pedestal and say, these are special people. These are people that have mastered the dark arts of running a business because, £60,000 would buy you a house back in the 90s. It wasn't a small amount of money.
No.
So you're thinking to yourself, how the hell does someone go from to build a business that's worth millions of pounds without robbing someone? And so it's been a learning curve for me. And obviously I don't think that way now, but it's kind of shaped my life up until that point. And I think that's why I was an employee right up until I was 34.
Yeah.
And the only reason I started the business, because like I said previously, I felt I needed to, because here in Blackpool, where we are now, located about 3 miles down the road from us, is Blackpool Pleasure Beach. And at the time that I moved here, that was the only full-time employer in the area that was offering jobs. And it was seasonal. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm not working February till November, working February till November, then reapplying for my job after Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't do that. I want money. I want regular, contracts. And I've kind of fallen back on that and gone, I need to do this. It wasn't a case of necessarily, yeah, sure, I wanted to start a business perhaps in the past, and I've been kind of shut down by people around me because people like us don't run businesses and stuff like that. To then ultimately being forced into it, because really the alternative is to just do what everyone else is doing, but everyone else is miserable. Everybody else is working a seasonal job that they hate, doing a job they don't want for long hours. And then, the reward at the end of the year is to simply just reapply for your job again at the end of the year. I'm like, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
And so I'm in some respects, yes, I have, when I lost my home back end of 2011, we lost our house, what have you, and we've kind of had to build our way back up again.
Mm-hmm.
I look back at that, and a lot of people will sort of have that. I'll be honest with you, it felt, certainly was the truth with me as well. I had that victim mindset where it's a case of life is happening to you. You know what I mean? Why is this happening to me? Why me? All this sort of stuff. And then ultimately, when you realise, actually, no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
And the only reason those that do give a shit are just glad it's not them with the problem. It's not, so when you kind of flip it on its head and go, right, well, no one's coming to save you, you know, needs must.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go down swinging if I have to. And then you have these little incremental wins along the way. And then you think, actually, you know, so long as you go up to the line and don't put your toe over it, actually, you work within the rules, obviously, but you use the rules that are in play right up to the line and go, right, well, that's my boundary. I can operate within those lines.
Yeah.
You know, and small incremental wins along the way. That's how I've managed to build it. And because, again, you've very fortunately, you've had that, at least that small amount of financial education working in the car trade, the marketing side, learning how that works. I genuinely didn't know that there was any other way to build it up for myself than to go slowly, steady, start with what I have and build up over time. And I'm very fortunate, I'm very blessed to be in the position that I'm in right now, where ultimately I don't really have to answer to anyone. You know, and I can largely live a life of flexibility.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not a millionaire and I'm not rolling around in money, but I don't worry about where the next bill's getting paid from.
Nope.
And when I put my head on the pillow at night, I can sleep knowing that there's not someone outside trying to take my shit, trying to take, you know, there's not someone outside, you know, chasing me for money I haven't got, you know. Yeah. And that's a real thing for a lot of people right now, especially now with obviously with everything that's going on, cost of living, you know, people are hard up and stuff like that, and looking for options, I think. And I think the irony is that now, more than ever, the answers are here.
Yeah.
You know, when we were kids, you imagine if you had a box in your pocket with all the answers.
Yeah, there's yellow pages and a BT phone book, and that's all we had. You know, and you know the odd leaflet that came through your door back then, or in the paper.
But it's not just that as well. It's like source of information. If you wanted information back when we were kids, you had to source that yourself. Not only did you have to source it, you had to source where that information was coming from.
Yeah.
Whereas now, it's like you want to Google something. It's like you want to ask me any question you want. I can find an answer on Google, YouTube, or any of these search engines and stuff like that. The irony is that a lot of young people I speak to look at people like us and say, it's all right for you. You're a business owner.
Yeah.
And what they don't realise is actually, at no point in history, and I'll challenge anybody, that I'll argue the toss with anybody, at no point in history has it ever been this easy to start a business. People will say, well, back in the 40s, it was dead easy to start a business and blah, blah. No, it wasn't. Because you still had to know what you were talking about. You still had to source the information. You still had to graft and grind to find it. And it's like, it's not exactly a graft and grind to go on YouTube and find out how to clean a window, is it?
No, you know, you can find that information. You can have enough information within 20 minutes from now to start a new business.
100%.
20 minutes.
100%.
You know, with all the technology that there is now, Chris, you know yourself, like ChatGPT, AI, all that sort of stuff. They can do scripts for you. You know, there's that much information.
Things like marketing for Facebook ads and stuff like that. It's like, you know, ChatGPT, write me an ad for window cleaning with all the appropriate hashtags for a Facebook post, dink. And it's literally, it'll smash one out in like five seconds for you. You know, the days of having to sort of go to a marketing expert and sort of let's look at a gap in the market. And bullshit. It's like, you know, it's now it's a case of, you know, finding a problem, finding a solution to that problem, and then convincing enough people to part with their money to take it off their hands.
Yeah.
You have a business.
Done. 100%.
And that, you know what I mean? So, anyway, I just wanted to sort of, I think we've kind of waxed lyrical for a fair bit. I just wanted to say, obviously, thank you, Phil, for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Likewise,
hopefully, Chris, we'll be knocking out a couple more of these episodes. Please give us a like, a subscribe to the content if you like what we do. And as usual, if you want to argue the toss, put a comment in the comments section. And hopefully, we'll see you very, very soon.
Yeah.
Keep on keeping on.
See you soon. Thanks.